We have entered fully into the information age. We are drowning in a sea of information. Everyone at work or in their personal life has at least one pile of material that they are planning to get to, and sometimes several piles. There are time management specialists today who charge $1,500 a day just to show busy executives how to get control of information overload. We do not lack information and ideas in a variety of forms, like books, magazines, articles, newsletters, faxes, correspondence, audio tapes, videotapes, and a variety of other communication devices. What we lack is the ability to analyze this material quickly for what is relevant, and then to remember the essential ideas that we need at the moment to do our work better and to improve our personal lives. There's never been a time where the development of your memory has been more important than it is today, except for perhaps tomorrow and next week and next year. Fortunately, with your 100 billion brain cells, each covered with as many as 20,000 dendrites, connecting them with other brain cells, your capacity to learn and memorize is virtually unlimited. There are many times when you need to memorize something, such as steps in a process, numbers, spelling, or codes, such as for an ATM machine. Being able to recall facts like these make your life easier, and it saves a good deal of time. You don't have to look around for the material or look it up somewhere. You can also use memory techniques to pass exams, both in school and for advancement in your field. Memory techniques enable you to do your job more effectively because they put essential facts at your fingertips. And it's very impressive to other people when you can pull names, numbers, facts, and information out of your head quickly in a work or personal situation. Here's a true story. Not long ago, a man with an average memory decided that he would concentrate for as long as it took, and in this case it took 3 or 4 years, on developing his memory to the highest possible level. He set a challenge for himself to memorize the names and phone numbers of a page of the Los Angeles telephone directory. He not only accomplished his goal of super memory, but he exceeded it. He has now memorized the entire Los Angeles telephone directory, including every name and number. When he was tested on his memory, the questioners found that they could give him any name and he could give the number, or they could give him any telephone number and he could give the name that went along with it. When you hear of memory feats like this, you are often overwhelmed by how smart these people must be. These are usually ordinary people who got ordinary grades in school with average intelligence. They have just developed their memory faculties to the point where they can accomplish extraordinary things, and so can you if you just learn how. Throughout this program, everything that you have learned from the very beginning has been aimed at helping you to memorize and apply material faster and faster. This is the real essence of all accelerated learning techniques. And even though it's a bold claim, you'll find that remembering what you have learned becomes much easier if you discipline yourself to learn in the comprehensive stages suggested in the previous sessions. If you increase your motivation to learn by setting clear learning goals for yourself and thinking about how the new knowledge and skills can help you, you will learn and remember better. If you prepare your mind to learn thoroughly through relaxation, visualization, and creating a pleasant environment, you will learn better and easier. If you take in the information in a way that suits your learning preferences, either visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, you will find that the material soaks into your brain easier. If you explore the material using one or more of your 7 intelligences, especially your dominant intelligence, you will learn at a faster rate than ever before. In this session and in the following session, you will learn the most popular, practical, proven, and dependable methods for memorization ever developed by memory specialists, written about by memory experts, or taught in memory courses. But, like any other set of skills, memory skills must be practiced continually until they become second nature to you. Developing your memory, like developing a muscle, is something that you begin slowly and then continue with for the rest of your life. By the way, the research is overwhelming with regard to mental activity and longevity. The more alert and aware you keep yourself by taking in new information and stimulating your mind to recall and apply the information, the physically healthier you will be, the more energy you will have, the better your brain will function, the more creative you will remain, and the longer you will live. There are 4 logical stages of learning, plus a 5th. The first logical stage of learning is when you are an unconscious incompetent. This is when you don't know, and you don't know that you don't know. As long as a person remains an unconscious incompetent, there is no hope for him. If he is not aware of what he does not know, he will see no need to learn the essential knowledge and skills he needs to improve his life. The second level of learning is when you become a conscious incompetent. This is the situation that exists when you don't know a particular subject, but you are aware that you don't know it. This is the beginning of change, growth, and development. It is only when you become aware of your own ignorance that you become open to the possibility of learning new material and improving your life. The third stage of learning is when you become a conscious competent. This is the stage where you learn new material and practice it, and you are consciously aware of what you are doing throughout. Everyone goes through the period of conscious competence, where they are concentrating on what they are doing for the first time or the first few times. They are consciously aware that they are competent. The fourth stage of learning is when you become an unconscious competent. This is where you have learned a subject so thoroughly that you can perform well in that area without conscious thought. When you learned to read, you had to sound out each word. Today, you can read an enormous amount of material without even slowing down to consider the pronunciation or the meaning of particular words. When you learned to ride a bicycle, you were awkward, clumsy, and highly aware of everything you were doing. Today, you can ride a bicycle or drive a car without conscious thought. Arriving at the level of the unconscious competent is what you do when you have thoroughly memorized and internalized the new knowledge and skill. The final or fifth stage of learning comes when you can turn around and teach someone else what you have learned and have them both understand and perform competently in that area. This is the highest form of memorization and understanding. Your goal should be to reach this point in the critical knowledge and skill areas of your work as quickly as possible. Obviously, there can be no learning without memory. So let's start off with a little bit about how your memory actually works, and then move on to some of the things that you can do to improve it. Without these ideas, as much as 70% of what you learn today can be forgotten within 24 hours, which means that you're wasting fully 70% or more of your time in any learning situation if you are not reinforcing that learning with memory techniques. You have both a short-term and a long-term memory. Your short-term memory is designed to hold information temporarily. For example, a phone number that you have looked up or a specific piece of information usually only goes into your short-term memory. You remember just long enough to use it, and then you forget it. You can think of your memory like transferring sheep into a big field. Short-term memory is like a holding pen at the entrance to the field. To transfer the sheep into the field or into long-term memory, you need to deliberately drive them in. Researchers have found that information needs to be repeated or acted on in some way in order to be transferred from your short-term memory to your long-term memory. Exploring what you have learned using your range of intelligences is one way to act on the new information and to assure that you retain it faster and longer. Researchers have also discovered that we have separate memories for sounds, sights, and feelings. That's why it makes sense not just to read something, but to repeat it out loud and, if possible, to find a way to associate it with a physical movement. For example, if you were learning a foreign language, you would read the word or phrase, speak it out loud, and act it out in an exaggerated way. This gives you three chances to learn the word or phrase rather than the single chance way of learning when you engage only one of your learning modalities. This need to act on the information explains why it's so important to make notes as you listen to a talk or lecture. When you make notes, you are both listening and writing. In this way, you involve your memory for sight, the notes, for sound, the talk or word spoken, and for movement, which you use with the physical action of writing. Again, by taking notes, you are learning in a multisensory way and dramatically increasing your propensity to remember. The good news is that your memory is already excellent. Work by Dr. Wilder Penfield at the Montreal Neurological Institute some years ago proved that memory is permanent. It is just the recall that we have problems with. In a series of experiments, they took patients who were undergoing various forms of brain surgery and gave the patients small jolts of electricity at different parts of the brain. These patients were then able to recall events that had occurred 20 and 30 and 40 years ago, even when they were as young as 5 or 6 years of age, with perfect clarity. They could recall the sight, the sound, the feeling, and all the details of the situation vividly, including colors and textures, when a particular part of the brain was stimulated. This went a long way to demonstrate that every experience you've ever had, you have recalled perfectly in every detail. One of your jobs is to learn how to access that information on demand, which we will discuss as we move along. Here's an exercise for you. Take a moment and imagine in your mind's eye opening your kitchen door. Now, starting with the wall on your left, mentally note everything in your kitchen. Observe the cupboards, the pictures, the kitchen appliances, the position of the stove, the refrigerator, the counter, the oven, the microwave, and everything else. Open the cupboards one by one and look inside, noticing where the plates, cups, and glasses are stored. The detail you can remember is incredible. You were probably amazed to see how excellent your memory is for things that you seldom think about. And that's just your kitchen. You could do the same exercise with every other room in your house. Police detectives are trained to be able to do the same with the rooms in a house or office that they are investigating after one visit. Napoleon Hill tells of a memory expert who was teaching a class about the importance of observing things carefully rather than just walking past them indifferently. He took the class for a walk down a busy street where they passed in front of several shop windows with displays of merchandise inside. When they came back to the classroom, he asked the class to write down as many things that they could remember from the shop windows they had passed. The brightest and most observant person in the class remembered something like 49 items from the short stroll down the street. Then the teacher began to recite off the things he had remembered, and the total was in excess of 600 different items that he had observed and stored away. The difference was not in the intelligence of either the instructor or the students. The difference was in the training and the commitment to remember. There's nothing wrong with your memory, you just need to learn to use it properly. Your long-term memory prefers to deal with meanings, so when you feed your memory with the type of information it likes to work with, it functions much better. If you try to memorize facts without understanding them and how they relate to each other, very little will happen. The whole essence of excellent memory is the ability to form associations between new incoming information and already existing information. This is why the more you learn, the more you can learn. Your job is to use every single device possible to hook incoming information into old data so that you retain it for a long period of time. Associations create meaning because we remember things that have meaning for us, and things have meaning when you can connect them or associate them with what you already know. In learning new European languages such as French, Spanish, or German, it's extremely helpful to learn how English evolved from those languages and the similarities that still exist within them. As many as 25% of these languages, as well as Italian, can be related to English words and meanings. Because of these associations, it's possible to learn one of these languages far faster than if you started out trying to figure out each individual word or phrase by itself. Whenever you have something new to learn, ask yourself what connections or associations the new material has with things with which you are already familiar. You also remember information that is organized in some sequence or in some relationship to other information. When you visualize your kitchen or your cupboards, you can see things in order and in relation to each other. Your cupboard with your dishes is laid out in such a way that different dishes are on different shelves in relation to each other. Organizing what you are learning into groups or categories works well. The reason is that by organizing material, you are actively doing something with the information rather than just passively looking at it. You are forming those critical connections and associations that hook the material into your long-term memory. The best strategy to ensure that you have strongly registered new information is for you to deliberately create links, connections, and associations between the old information and the new. One of the reasons why learning maps are so effective is because they allow you to create links between ideas and associations that you may not have seen before. These associations help your memory. Learning maps look a lot like brain cells. The main theme in the middle has ideas branching out from it, very similar to neurons and dendrites. Maybe that's why learning maps seem to work so well, because they're consistent with the way your brain works. Let's take a moment to explore how your memory works. Here is a list of 7 words. I will recite them one by one, and you listen prior to recalling them afterwards. Here they are. Truth. Table. Fork. Zulu. Radio. Wisdom. Flower. Now, stop and see how many of these words you can remember from one recitation of the list. Let's see what kind of conclusions we can draw from this simple exercise. If you compare your memory to the seven words that I recited, you will notice the following points. First, you probably remember the first word of the series, the word truth. This is because you tend to remember more of the beginning of any learning session or situation. You've heard it said that first impressions are lasting. Your mind seems to be more open, alert, and uncluttered when you're exposed to a new learning situation of any kind. Second, you probably remember the last word, the word flower, as well. This is because you tend to remember more of what you learn at the end of each session or experience. In fact, as a professional speaker, one of the first things I learned was that people are most affected by what happens at the beginning of a talk or seminar and what happens at the end. The various books and courses of instruction on public speaking will tell you to plan the beginning and the end of the talk carefully, word for word, and then develop the body of the talk in the middle. Good speakers and good entertainers almost invariably save the very best part of their material for the very end, knowing that this is where they will leave the most lasting impression on their listeners. If you put these two conclusions together, the importance of the first word and the importance of the last word, you will have a typical pattern of recall from a learning session that says that your potential for recall is highest at the beginning at the end and lowest in the middle. So here's an interesting point. If you want to keep your levels of recall high, you should add lots of beginnings and endings to your learning sessions. The way to do this, as we mentioned earlier, is to take regular breaks. Most people find it difficult to really concentrate for more than 20 to 30 minutes at a time. So don't force yourself into long learning sessions. Stop frequently and take 1 or 2 minute holidays. Get up, walk around, close your eyes, and breathe deeply. Have a conversation with someone. Make a telephone call. Do some exercise. Anything to break your space as you go through learning sessions. The effect of taking frequent breaks is that it keeps your recall level much higher because you have lots of beginnings and endings where you tend to remember the most. Going back to our list of words, which as you recall were truth, table, fork, Zulu, radio, wisdom, and flower, you probably remembered the word Zulu as well. This was because it stood out from the list, and it was therefore easier for you to form a mental picture of a Zulu. This would be even easier if you had seen the movies Zulu or Zulu Dawn, which were made a few years ago. You tend to remember things that are odd, bizarre, comical, rude, or sexual. These things give your mind a little jolt and are easy to picture, so they are more memorable to you. If you want to remember something, then, try really hard to associate it with a funny or unusual mental image. This is exactly what the professional memory experts do, and you'll shortly learn how to do the same thing to remember the names of people you meet, where you left your car keys, and other facts or details about a subject. You also remember real, concrete things more easily than you do abstract concepts or ideas. The more specific and concrete you can make a word or a fact, the easier it is for you to get your mind to grab a hold of it. Real things are easier to remember than abstract ideas because you can picture them in your mind's eye. You remember pictures many times better than words, so find a way to make a picture of what you are learning, either literally or in your head. For example, if you think of the word wisdom, you can think of Socrates, the philosopher who is known for his great wisdom. If you were thinking of the concept of justice, you could visualize a courthouse or a figure of justice blindfolded, holding the scales of justice. In this way, you take an abstract and you make a specific picture of it that you could hook into. Here's an important point. Many people think that they lack the ability to visualize, but this concern is based on the misunderstanding that you need to actually see the image as if it were in glorious color and cinemascope. Nothing could be further from the truth. Such vivid visualization may be extra helpful, and you can learn it over time, but it's not necessary for memorization. Everyone can visualize sufficiently to improve their memory. Like a muscle, it's an ability that you can develop through use. Here's the proof. What side of your car is your steering wheel on? The only way you can answer that question as quickly as you did is by visualizing it in your mind's eye. Here's another question. Have you ever worried about anything? Are you worrying about anything now? Everybody has worries, and worry is a process whereby you picture something unpleasant and then you feel as if it had already happened. By visualizing the worry situation, you make it real for you, and you experience the real emotions that would go along with the situation if it actually occurred. So, if you can worry, you can visualize. Here's another question. How many windows are there in your kitchen? If you can answer that, you can visualize. Fully 99% of the population have the capacity to form visual images. Your job is to develop this capacity to a higher and higher level. Your visual memory is very strong, and the faster and better you activate it, the better your memory will be for virtually everything else. A picture is worth a thousand words. In a study from the University of Rochester, a group of people were shown 2,500 separate photographs, one every 10 seconds. 3 days later, they were shown 250 pairs of photographs. The photographs in the pairs were deliberately similar to each other. One picture was a picture they had seen, and the other was new. Yet the respondents in this study could tell with more than 90% accuracy which of the photos they had seen before and which they had not. It's because of the strength of your visual memory that we are emphasizing so many visual tools of learning. I've encouraged you to make mental pictures of what you are learning by drawing a diagram, a chart, a sketch, or a cartoon, and by using color, highlighting, and underlining. When you create your own diagrams, charts, or learning maps, you begin to see the patterns in the information. Each piece of information then triggers your memory of other things that are associated with it in the same picture. If I ask you to think about your dining room table, you will almost instantly be aware of all the other furniture in the room around your dining room table. You might even think back to when and how you bought the dining room table, and your situation in life at the time, and the dining room tables that you looked at before you selected the one you purchased. The single concept of dining room table will trigger your memory for dozens and eventually hundreds of other details. Many people think they are poor in geography. However, if you took a particular part of the world and you drew a map of each country in that part of the world, and then drew a map of that entire part of the world with each country in place, like a jigsaw puzzle, you would be amazed at how quickly you would learn your geography and how permanently you would retain it. The four R's of memory are 1. Review, which is an active attempt to remember a particular fact or piece of information. Number 2 is registration, which means getting it into your long-term memory using a memory device. Number 3 is retention, which is keeping it in your long-term memory long enough for it to become permanent. And number 4 is recall, which is accessing those facts from your long-term memory when you need them. If you look at a model of your memory, you will find a real difference between the registration of information and the ability to recall it on demand. In order to recall what you have learned, you need to register it strongly so that it makes an impression. This requires action on your part. It requires that you do something. New facts and information come into your short-term memory. If you do not reflect on them or review them, they drop out of your short-term memory and are quickly forgotten. However, if you review the information, you register the new facts, and they pass into your long-term memory where you can recall them at a later time. Review is an active attempt to register information in your long-term memory. You do this by hooking the facts into your visual, auditory, and physical memories. The brain has lots of memory sites or locations, more than you could ever use, and the more sites or senses you involve, the better you will register the new information. It's like putting reminders up all over your house. The more places you put reminders to jog your memory, the easier it is to remember. An ideal time to review what you have learned would be when you go back to the subject after a break. But a review is not the same as a simple repetition. Simple repetition without actively exploring the meaning of the subject has much less effect on your memory. For this reason, the form of your review should vary. Sometimes it can be a rereading of your learning maps. Sometimes you can summarize the material out loud. Sometimes you can run through the material from beginning to end without any notes or prompts at all, just from your memory. If you read about something, repeat it out loud, picture it in your head, and jot down a couple of reminders. In this way, you've reviewed it visually, auditorily, and physically. This is a multisensory review that doubles and triples the likelihood that you will remember the material. For example, a group of students was given a list of nonsense syllables to learn. Nonsense words are the most difficult words to learn because they lack meaning or association with each other. Each of the groups was instructed to spend different times on reading and review. The group that spent 100% of their time just reading the nonsense syllables were found to have remembered 65 of the syllables. But the group that spent only 20% of their time reading the syllables and 80% of their time reviewing the syllables in different ways were able to remember 137 nonsense syllables, a doubling of memory power in the same period of time by merely approaching the material in a different way. The time you spend reviewing what you have learned can at least double and perhaps even triple your recall. Some studies show a 400% improvement in memory by using proper review techniques. People who don't review as they learn are constantly putting new information into their minds, but they are then allowing that information to slip away. This often frustrates them and makes learning difficult for them because they start to believe that they lack the capacity to hold on to the material. They become less motivated to learn new information because they doubt that they have the ability to hold on to it. The problem is that they're not reviewing it properly or often enough. Spending a little time to register it properly at the beginning saves a huge amount of time later. The simple truth is that most information is not forgotten. The problem is it was never shifted from short-term memory into long-term memory in the first place. You can rapidly increase the amount at which you internalize and memorize new information by the use of three psychological tricks that you play on your mind as you learn. First, as you listen or read, imagine that your boss has asked you to take in this information and give him or her a complete report of all the key points and ideas that he or she can use afterwards. In other words, think about how you would give this report to your boss or to another senior person at the same time you were learning the material yourself. This forces you to learn on two levels simultaneously and greatly increases the likelihood of your memorizing the material. Second, imagine that you are learning this material prior to giving a course on this material to a room full of students. As you learn, think of how you would lay out this material and teach it to others. Remember, two of the most important rules in learning and personal development are these. First, you learn what you teach. Teaching a subject is one of the fastest ways to understand it at great depth. Second, you become what you teach. The more important a subject is to you and to your work and your personal life, the more important it is that you look for ideas to transfer your knowledge to others. The third technique you can use is to imagine that you are going to be writing a book on the subject that you are learning, and that you would be writing it from a brand new viewpoint from this author or instructor or any other. As you learn the new material, think of how you would reorganize and resynthesize it in your own way to make it even better and more accessible than it is in its current form. Think of your memory like a library with thousands of books or facts stored in it. If the books were stored in a haphazard manner or in an irrelevant manner, such as by size or color, they would be almost impossible for you to find any one book. This is because there is no logical connection between them. However, if the books were stored in an organized way, alphabetically, by subject and author, then retrieval or recall becomes quick and easy. So to remember well, you need to create plenty of strong connections or associations among data. To demonstrate this, three groups of students were each asked to learn 10 new words. The first group just read the words. The second group sorted the words by types of words. The third group formed sentences that contained the words. The results? Group 3 remembered 2.5 times better than group 1. Why? Because by forming sentences, they associated and related the words to each other. In a second study, 4 groups of students were asked to learn pairs of words, like the words dove and the word car paired together. The first group read the words silently. The second group read a sentence aloud that contained the words. The third group made up their own sentence and read it aloud. The fourth group made up a vivid mental picture where the words interacted with each other. They created a sentence like the dove just missed a speeding car. Which group do you think learned the best? The answer is that each group did better than the one before it. The group that read a sentence aloud that contained the words did better than the group that read the words silently. The group that made up their own sentence and read it out loud did better than the group that merely read another sentence aloud, and the group that made a vivid mental picture did better than any of the other three groups. In fact, the final group learned 3 times better than the first by combining the words in a vivid mental picture. Memory could have been increased even more if the fourth group had been asked to describe out loud their mental picture of the words interacting. In this way, they would have had a story with interactive pictures and sound, and their rate of memorization would probably have been 4 or 5 times the group that merely read the material silently. Here are some ideas that you can use to remember more from any learning situation. First, at the beginning of the learning session, relax and let go of any concerns. Take a few deep breaths and close your eyes if possible and listen to some gentle classical music. During the learning session, take frequent breaks every 20 to 30 minutes. Get up, breathe deeply, roll your shoulders and your neck, walk around, get a drink of water, and change your space. Make any information memorable by doing something to the information so that it's more vivid and more likely to stick. Highlight the book or information with color. Your emotional middle brain, which controls your memory, likes color and takes extra notice of it. Make an active mental picture of the information. Create learning maps to show connections and associations. Visualize scenes, words, or parts actually moving, or draw a picture that represents what the new material means to you. Another way to remember in a learning situation is to sort the information into groups or lists that are related to each other. Order the groups or lists in what you consider to be their relative order of importance. Read the new material aloud. Even read it aloud in a funny accent. You remember what is unusual or bizarre, so use that fact to your advantage. Find a connection or an association between what you have just learned and what you already know. We'll talk more about this in the next session. Summarize what you have learned out loud in your own words. This is an absolutely key skill. People who spend time repeating material remember at least twice as much as people who only spend their time reading and rereading it. Another simple but highly effective way to memorize what you are learning is to keep glancing back at what you have just learned. The more often you review things in your mind, the more firm an impression the material will make. Remember the jungle path we referred to earlier. The more often you walk down that path, the more clearly defined it becomes. That's why review and repetition are absolutely essential to accelerated learning. A final point on memorizing material is the importance of sleeping on new material as you are learning it. Often you forget because the information is never registered properly. Sometimes, however, information just seems to fade from your memory. In fact, early researchers thought that memory gradually faded, rather like a piece of curtain can be faded by the sun. We now know, however, that memory becomes blurred when new information is so similar to what we already know that newer experiences interfere with our memory of the material. It is therefore not predominantly the passing of time that causes memory to fade. It's interference by similar things we have subsequently learned. You can combat this process by deliberately interrupting an important learning session by an overnight sleep. The most important function of sleep is to allow your brain to consider the new things you have learned and experienced during the day. These are then filed and consolidated into your memory system. This happens during what is called rapid eye movement sleep, or REM sleep. REM sleep occurs when your eyes move rapidly behind your closed eyelids at night. These REM sessions coincide with dreaming, which led researchers to speculate that you sleep in order to dream. In turn, you dream in order to sort and integrate your new experiences into the existing networks of your memory. According to this approach, the sleeping brain is like an offline computer. No new information comes in during sleep. Instead, the time is taken up with making sense of what you've already experienced or learned. Therefore, your ideal learning pattern would be the following 4 steps. First, learn the material in a variety of ways. Second, review the material briefly before you go to sleep. Third, sleep. And fourth, briefly review the previous day's learning again in the morning. To test this theory, 2 groups of students were assigned to learn a word list for the same amount of time. The first group was tested after 8 hours of daytime activity. They scored 9% correct recall of the list of words. The second group was tested after 8 hours of sleep. They scored 56% recall, an improvement in memory of more than 6 times. If you can't sleep overnight between learning sessions, a period of different activity, such as listening to music or exercising, will cause less interference and help the process of memory. This is why we say that a change is often as good as a rest. The very fact that similar material interferes with your ability to memorize would suggest that you vary your subjects throughout the day. If you were studying mathematics, you wouldn't study geometry immediately after algebra. You wouldn't study French immediately after German. You wouldn't study one area of law immediately after another. Instead, you would learn better by studying something completely different that requires your brain approaching it in a whole new way. In the next session, I'll show you some of the most powerful techniques ever developed to improve your memory. There's a principle called the law of predominant attention. This is a fancy name for the discovery that the mind can only think of one thing at a time. Your mind is incredible in that it can deal with hundreds of thousands of facts in a row, and it can store hundreds of thousands or millions of bits of information. But it can only deal with single facts one at a time. You may think that you can listen to the radio and read a book at the same time. In practice, however, your attention is rapidly shifting back and forth between the book and the radio, causing you to neither hear the entire radio program nor to remember the contents of the book. What this means is that, as obvious as it may sound, to register new information strongly in your long-term memory requires that you focus your full attention on it. Just as the camera will take a poor picture if the lens is not focused properly, your memory will be vague and unreliable if your senses are not totally focused on the learning task while it's going on. What we're really talking about is concentration. It's the most important single quality for success in our society today. If you have every other attribute and ability, including clear goals, plans, and well-organized schedules, you will still not be successful if you cannot concentrate single-mindedly on one thing at a time and stay with it until it's complete. On the other hand, if you lack many of the other blessings of modern society, but you have developed yourself to the point where you can concentrate at will on what you consider to be the most important item at the moment, then your success is virtually guaranteed. Concentration is simply a habit. It takes time to develop, but the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. The fact is that no one concentrates on a subject without distraction for more than a minute or so. This is normal and natural. But the people who learn to concentrate and who can therefore learn well are simply those who have practiced bringing their minds back to the subject each time it wanders. It's in the nature of your mind to wander, so when you begin developing the habit of concentration, it will feel a little bit unnatural. Your subconscious mind may even play tricks on you by giving you all kinds of phony reasons why concentration is neither necessary nor desirable. But you must ignore these blandishments. They're simply ways to help you let yourself off the hook of developing the critical habit you need for lifelong success. If you want to demonstrate to yourself how poor your level of concentration is, here's an exercise that is quite revealing. Take your wristwatch and focus on it for 30 seconds without diversion or distraction to any other thought. Use all your mental strength to keep your mind solely on the watch and on the moving second hand. You will find to your amazement that you cannot do it. No matter how hard you try, your mind will wander. No matter how often you come back to it, you will not be able to keep your attention focused on the watch for 30 seconds without diversion or distraction. You will finally give up in frustration. In fact, it's been said that if you could develop your concentration to the point where you could focus on your watch face for 2 solid minutes without your mind wandering, you could accomplish almost anything you could want in life. Earlier in this course, I mentioned that 3 of the most important keys to learning and memory are desire, motivation, and relevance. You must intensely desire to develop a better memory. You must be motivated to develop a better memory by thinking of what's in it for you. And you must feel that memorization techniques are relevant to a specific part of your work or personal life. So before you begin learning the following techniques, Set some memory goals for yourself. Decide in what areas you want your memory to improve, and think of how helpful it would be for you to have an excellent memory in certain circumstances. Visualize yourself with an outstanding memory for facts, figures, information and details, or foreign language words in a particular situation. The more intensely you desire to improve your memory, the easier it will be for you to actually associate and remember memorization techniques. Here are two affirmations you can use that are very helpful. First, say to yourself, "I concentrate easily and well on new material." Repeat this several times, especially when you find your mind wandering. "I concentrate easily and well on new material." The second affirmation is for you to continually say to yourself, "I learn easily and well," or "I easily learn anything I put my mind to." When you repeat these affirmations, "I concentrate easily and well," "I learn easily and well," and "I easily learn anything I put my mind to," you will be amazed at how your subconscious mind will respond by enabling you to concentrate better and better and longer and longer as time passes. Throughout your life, there are things that you have experienced only once and remembered indefinitely. These are times when you have been intensely aware of both yourself and the experience simultaneously, almost as if you were observing the situation happening to you from outside of yourself. In fact, whenever you can step back from yourself and observe what is happening as though you were a third party, your likelihood of remembering that event is greatly increased. This is because the entire situation is far more vivid and clear than the normal stream of experiences that make up your daily existence. These high points of memory are almost invariably points of high emotionality as well. For example, you could get in your car and drive all the way to work and not remember a single part of the trip. But if an accident occurred in front of you suddenly, or you were cut off in traffic and had to slam on your brakes to stop from crashing into the other car, or even if you heard something really important on the radio, you would remember those points with tremendous clarity when you got to work, and you could recall them in detail. I can remember sitting in a history class at about 1:30 in the afternoon on November 22, 1963, when the announcement came over the loudspeaker that President John F. Kennedy had been assassinated in Dallas. Today, I can still see all the details of the class, the teacher at the front of the class and the students around me. I can see the blackboard, the bookcases, and the window with the sun coming in. The intensity of the moment created a Polaroid picture of that time and place that I will never forget. Almost everyone who was living at that time had a similar experience. You've had many such experiences over the course of your lifetime. These are the moments that live in your memory with the same vividness and intensity as if they had happened only a short time ago. And here's the point. What if you could develop your memory so that it was so acute that you could have that same capacity for recollection for any idea or piece of information that you wanted to remember? Well, people with excellent memories are those who have developed the capacity to do exactly that. Here are a series of ways to develop a super memory by training yourself to concentrate and by learning a series of associations and connections among data and information. The first memory technique is how to remember names and match them to faces. The reason why most people find it difficult to remember names is that people's names rarely have any direct association with their faces. It's easier to remember names if Mr. Baker bakes bread or if Mr. Carpenter makes furniture. It's more difficult when there doesn't seem to be any connection between who the person is, what the person does, and their actual name. The secret to remembering names is to create a strong visual association between the name and the face. Here's how you remember names faster and easier. Start by expecting to remember. Say to yourself, "I remember names easily and well. I will remember this person's name." These words, repeated emphatically, are accepted by your subconscious mind as a command, and your subconscious mind is trained to obey your commands. Look closely at the new person. Face them directly. Lean slightly forward and pay attention to them, as if he or she were the only person in the room. Look at his or her hair closely. Remember, it's not just plain hair. It's either long or short. It's straight or curly, black, blonde, brown, gray, or something else. Be sensitive to the hair, as if a professional hairdresser had asked you to observe and report back. Look closely at the eyebrows of the person. They are not just strips of hair above the eyes. They are arched or thin. They are either carefully manicured or messy. Look at the person's eyes carefully. Observe their color, as well as whether or not they are large or small, close or wide-set. Look at his or her nose. Is it small or large? Is it long or short? Is it narrow or wide, straight or curved? Finally, look at his or her face. Is it round, oval, or square? When you really look at a person rather than just glance at them, you will see an incredible variation in detail. And remember, the first few times you do this, you'll find it difficult. But be patient with yourself. Learning anything worthwhile requires practice. Pretty soon, you'll become an expert on faces. By looking at the hair, the eyebrows, the eyes, the nose, and the face, as well as perhaps the body and other distinguishing features, you will have registered the person strongly. The next step in remembering names is for you to create an association between the visual appearance of the face and the name of the person. Here's how you do it. Repeat the person's name right away and explain why you were doing this. Explain that you would like to remember the person's name and that you consider people's names to be very important. If it makes sense, ask the person to spell their name for you. People are very emotionally attached to their names, and they will always be willing to spell their names for you and repeat them if you ask. If the name is unusual and you have the time, ask them for the origin of their name. Most people have spent a good deal of time studying the background of their names, and they very much enjoy explaining how their name originally developed and where it came from. This is a great way to create a stronger association between the person and the name. Look for a visual link between the person's face and their name. Look for something that associates the physical characteristics of their face with their name. If possible, exaggerate the characteristics of the person's face in your own mind, like cartoonists do. This makes them even more memorable. Ask yourself, who else do I know with the same name? Try to picture the two people interacting in some way. If this person's name is Henry, imagine introducing someone else you also know named Henry to this person. Repeat the person's name several times to yourself quickly. Imagine the person's name is Harold. When you meet the person and are shaking hands, look closely at the person's face and repeat to yourself the words, Harold, 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 Harold. You need to repeat a word about six times in order to remember it. Finally, visualize the person's name stamped on their forehead. Actually make an effort to see the words written out in block letters across their forehead. When you say goodbye to the person, repeat the name again. And make a decision to recall that name when you meet the person again. You may have thought that there was a trick to remembering names, but this simply isn't true. Remember the mental groove that we have talked about in previous sessions. When you first decide to begin remembering people's names, you will find it fairly difficult. This is normal. But as you concentrate and practice on remembering more and more names, you will find that it becomes easier and easier. And the more names you remember, the more names you can remember. It's like touch typing. The more you practice, the faster you become, the more words you can produce. I have friends who are professional speakers who decided to get into the area of teaching memory. They read the books, listened to the tapes, and took the courses. Now they can meet and greet 100 people at the beginning of a seminar and remember their names for the rest of the seminar, even if they move around. It's not a feat of brain power, it's simply a matter of practice. And you can do it too. The secret of success in remembering names is very simple. Learn the skill and make an effort to apply it. It's no different than playing football or riding a bike. You can do it if you make the effort. The skill in remembering names is to first of all really concentrate hard on the face, and second, to find a way to associate or link the name with the face. The real reason you forget names is because you hardly ever try to remember them. You glance at the person, hear the name in your short-term memory, but you make no real effort to move it over into your long-term memory. It's not that you forget the name, it's just that it never entered into your long-term memory in the first place. Remember, in order to transfer information from your short-term memory to your long-term memory, to drive those sheep out of the holding pen, you need to activate your various senses and bring them to bear on the information you want to retain. Here's another technique to remember your personal identity number, your PIN number, or any other number for that matter. Say your number is 4285. Simply invent a memorable phrase or sentence that uses a 4-letter, a 2-letter, an 8-letter, and a 5-letter word. 4285. Memorize the phrase and you can always work out the number. Words are easier to remember than numbers because they mean something. Your phrase of four words may be, "Grab my invested money." The word grab has 4 letters. The word my has 2 letters. The word invested has 8 letters. The word money has 5 letters. Grab my invested money is the same as 4285. You can use the same formula for remembering dates, birthdays, formulas, and anything numerical. Just create a simple sentence made up of words containing the same number of letters as the numbers you want to recall. Now, how do you remember where you put your car keys? This is quite simple using some of the principles you've just learned. First of all, set them down deliberately. Then, notice exactly in what shape they are lying, what surface they are on, and what they are lying against or near. Imagine you were going to paint a picture of your car keys. Then, step back and blink your eyes as if you were photographing your car keys. This whole process takes between 5 and 10 seconds. As a result of taking a mental snapshot of your car keys and their location, you'll remember where they are whenever you want to. You have now switched their location from your short-term memory into your long-term memory, and the location is available for immediate recall. Developing a good memory is easy when you know how. It is simply a matter of concentrating and then creating as many associations as possible, especially visual associations with the new material. How do you remember something that you have forgotten? The answer is to use the power of association. Retrace in your mind what led up to and what followed the forgotten event, name, fact, or article. What were you doing when the event occurred? What were you thinking, feeling, or saying? What were your physical surroundings? Try to bring the whole situation alive again in your memory. Think of it like a hole into which the forgotten item has disappeared. You are only interested in examining the surroundings of that hole in great detail. When you have all the associations, say to yourself positively, as a command to your subconscious mind, "I shall soon remember this in complete detail." Then, turn it over to your subconscious mind and get yourself thinking elsewhere. In no time at all, the answer will emerge. Sometimes it's helpful to go through the alphabet letter by letter. Often you will get a strong feeling for which letter of the alphabet the forgotten item begins with. This triggers the memory as well. If you're ever trying to remember someone's name, use this alphabet technique. It's amazing how quickly it triggers the memory of the entire name. Here are 17 memory techniques and principles, some of which we have touched upon in earlier sessions. They are a mental fitness program, like a physical fitness program that you might take at a health club. They require that you work out with a whole series of mental muscles in a variety of different ways to achieve a well-balanced ability to remember any subject or type of information you encounter. First, make a decision to remember. The more absolutely determined you are to remember a particular fact or event, the better your memory will be. When you clearly decide in your conscious mind that you're going to remember something easily and well, your subconscious mind gradually begins to switch on, like turning on different lights in a room, until your memory starts to work better and better. By the way, the reason why witnesses of an automobile accident are so unreliable is that they never intended to remember the scene when it occurred. On the other hand, when you're determined to absorb the very most out of a situation when it takes place, you'll be amazed at how well your mind works. Second, take regular breaks. The effect of taking frequent breaks is that it keeps your recall level much higher because you have lots of beginnings and endings where you tend to remember the most. Third, review what you have learned on a regular basis in the days and months that follow. You can often review key parts of what you are learning in spare time that would otherwise be wasted. For example, while you're waiting for a bus, sitting in traffic, waiting for an appointment, or while you're doing something that doesn't require a lot of concentration. Each review should take only a very short time, say 3 to 4 minutes. And each review should only be of the notes you took or the highlighted sections, but never the entire book. Only go back to the original book if you want to get clear on something. A regular pattern of review can lead to very substantial improvements in your remembering. In fact, studies have shown that instead of forgetting 70% of the material after 24 hours, you can remember 80% or more after 6 months with a simple sequence of review. This sequence consists of 6 steps. First, learn the material. Second, review the material briefly after an hour. Third, review it once more after a day. Fourth, review it again after 1 week. Fifth, review it again after 1 month. And sixth, review it again after 6 months. This entire review process will only take about 30 minutes over a period of 6 months, but it will triple your memory efficiency. Remember, if it's worth learning in the first place, it's worth reviewing a few times so that you retain it permanently. The fourth memory technique is for you to deliberately create multisensory memories. You know that you have a separate memory for what you see, what you hear, and what you do. Multisensory experiences help you to form longer-lasting memories. When you want to remember, it's smart for you to do everything possible to assure that you have a visual, auditory, and physical experience in your learning. By making notes or a learning map as you listen to a talk, you trigger all 3 senses. You listen, which triggers your auditory sense. You make the notes or a learning map, which triggers your physical sense. And you see what you have written or drawn, which triggers your visual sense. Another way to create a multisensory memory is to watch as someone else demonstrates the process, which triggers your visual sense. Say out loud or repeat the steps in the process, which activates your auditory sense, and then walk through or act out the steps in the process yourself, which uses your physical sense. The fifth memory technique is to make your visual images interact. Visual memory is normally the strongest. If you can create not only a visual image of the things you are learning, but then make them link together in some way, you'll have a powerful memory aid. Try to picture the image and the feel or sound of the new subject. Make this as active and as interactive as possible. You remember things better when they involve movement of some kind. For example, imagine a horse standing still. Now, imagine that same horse galloping across a pasture. Which of the two creates the stronger image in your mind? It's obvious the galloping horse is far more vivid because movement adds memorability to an event. Move the image forward or backward in your mind. Make things dance together or stand on top of or below or inside one another. You can even add temperature by imagining things as hot or cold. Make it memorable by making it move. You also remember things better when they involve humor or strangeness. Funny things are well remembered, as are unusual and even vulgar things. If you can create a strange visual picture or image of an event or series of events, you will find it much easier to recall the entire event at a later time. And the stranger and more colorful the images, the better your memory will be. Color is another way to help you remember things better. Be sure to add color and brightness to your mental pictures. Close your eyes and picture a screen in your mind. See the event on your screen, fully colored, bright, active, and funny if possible. It'll be very hard for you not to remember that later on. Detail and movement are the keys to a vivid and memorable image. Use of imagery for learning and remembering are so powerful that you can apply them to learning any subject or taking any exam. The sixth memory technique enables you to improve your spelling instantly. To remember the spelling of a particular word, simply create a multisensory memory of that word in order to firmly establish it in your long-term memory. First, chunk the word up into syllables. For example, the word psychiatrist would be split into 4 parts as psy-chi-a-trist. Then you first pronounce the individual letters in the first syllable of psychiatrist, the letters P-S-Y. Then say the whole syllable, psi. Next, spell out the second syllable, C-H-I. Then pronounce the syllable, chi. Next, the third syllable, A. Finally, spell out the 4th set of letters, T-R-I-S-T, and then pronounce it trist. Now visualize the syllables as if they were written on a blackboard in white chalk. Imagine the blackboard is slightly above your eye level. Close your eyes and repeat the individual letters and then the sound of the syllables, try to see the letters clearly. Now create another strong visual memory by writing the word out in bold letters or write over the word several times in different colors. Create a physical memory by writing the word several times on paper or in large movements in the air or with a fiber tip or fountain pen whose texture you enjoy using. Complete the auditory memory by saying and spelling the word out loud as a complete word. You can use this method of learning words for both English words and for words of a foreign language. The most important thing is to make an effort to see, feel, and hear the word exactly as it is spelled and exactly as it sounds. The more often you do this, the better a speller you will become, and the easier it becomes to learn more and more words faster and with great accuracy. The seventh learning technique is to try a review concert with new material. You can make what you are learning more memorable by using music as you learn. Music helps you to relax, and you learn more easily when you relax. Music also stimulates the emotional part of your brain, where an important element of your long-term memory is situated. Music makes sure that your whole brain is involved in the learning. To oversimplify it, your right hemisphere works on the music, and your left hemisphere deals with the words. Music is the universal language of mankind because it creates moods and feelings and pictures without the need for words. It can be an even more direct form of communication than the language. A simple way you can use music is to play a recording that you find appealing as you review what you want to remember. Certain styles of music, especially gentle classical music or Baroque music, are particularly effective for learning. You can review what you are learning by simply reading a summary out loud as you listen to the music. Another way to do this is to record a summary of what you want to memorize on an audio cassette and listen to it and your music together. The aim of playing music while reviewing the material is to create what is called a review concert. You sit back quietly, relax, and listen to the music. You'll be surprised at how it brings back clear memories of what you've learned, like a mental movie. This technique is used very successfully in language learning courses as well. You've had experience with the concept of review concerts whenever you hear a song that was playing during an important part of your life. The song will bring back all kinds of thoughts, images, and emotions that you recorded at the same time. This works equally well for learning new subjects today. The eighth technique is for you to organize the material meaningfully. Make it memorable by organizing or sorting what you are learning into groups or categories that relate to each other. Each group of new ideas or information should contain items that have some similarity to each other. Then, you label each group of words or concepts with a keyword that in some way expresses the similarity or relationship between the items. Once you have each group with its title or label, you need only memorize the key words. Later, when you recall the key words, you will find that you will also remember all the items that made up the group. For example, if I say to you the words living room or kitchen, you will be able to instantly recall all the furniture and details of those rooms in your home. Learning or memory maps are a particularly effective way to organize material meaningfully so that you can recall it quickly by simply flipping the picture into your mind. A concise, organized, meaningful, and visual summary creates a memorable impression of what you are learning. The ninth technique for accelerated learning is called memory flashing. This method is extremely powerful and simple as well. First, you take your notes on a learning map or in the form of a brief list of key points. Second, you study them carefully for 1 or 2 minutes. Third, you then set your notes aside and redraw or rewrite them from memory, creating a second set of notes. Fourth, you now compare the two learning maps or sets of notes, the original and the one you just made. You will immediately see anything that you missed. Fifth, you now make a third set of notes or a third learning map and again compare your new set of notes or learning map with the original. When the original and your new set of notes are finally the same, you will have created a very strong memory for your notes. In many cases, because your learning map is itself a way of concentrating a lot of information into a few brief notes, you may be able to record a whole book or program in one easily remembered form. The keywords will trigger your memory for lots of detail. A great way to demonstrate the power of this technique to yourself is to create a learning map with all the different learning techniques branching out from a central core. In no time at all, you can memorize all the different ways to memorize. The 10th learning technique consists of the use of flashcards. Some subjects lend themselves to writing on index cards, like scientific formula or foreign words. You can then use these index cards in your spare time for review and personal testing. Alternately, you could carry a portable notebook and jot down key facts for regular review. This is one of the best techniques for learning that you'll ever find. The 11th technique consists of creating flash maps. Flash maps are larger versions of flashcards. The way you do this is create a ring binder for all your learning maps with dividers between the subjects. You then file a copy of all your learning maps in this binder. As a result, in one single document, you will have a portable, personal reference book on your whole area of study. You can keep an entire 1, 2, or 3-year learning program in this form. Remember, repetition and review of all kinds are the keys to long-term memorization. The 12th learning technique is for you to create a mnemonic. This is just a fancy name for a memory aid. It's an acronym or a word made up from the first letters of the key points of what you're trying to remember. Almost every government agency is called by a set of initials, whether it is NASA, standing for National Aeronautical Space Agency, or the IRS, standing for the Internal Revenue Service, or the DEA, standing for the Drug Enforcement Agency. The best mnemonics are those containing 3, 5, 7, or 9 letters. But it doesn't really matter how many you use. You can pick a word like power or success, and then create statements that summarize what you are learning, the first word of each of which begins with one of those letters. A friend of mine, for example, summarizes his ideas for success in the word ACE. He builds an entire talk around the 3 letters. A stands for attitude, C stands for commitment, and E stands for excellence. I once did an entire program for the Prudential Assurance Company of America built around the word prudential, with each letter standing for a key part of their business. It was very effective. The 13th technique is to let the information sink in overnight, as I mentioned earlier. If you review your notes on a subject for a few moments before getting ready for bed, you will learn it far more rapidly. Your brain appears to use sleep as a time to file away information. Your dreams help you to connect new information to what you already know. The 14th memory technique is both simple and extremely useful. It is to number the points, ideas, or actions you need to remember so that you will automatically know if you have forgotten one of them. For example, there are 6 stages of learning. Number 1 is preparing to learn. Number 2 is getting the facts. Number 3 is exploring the subject. Number 4 is memorizing the material. Number 5 is showing you know, and number 6 is reviewing the learning process. You must get into the habit of applying all 6 in order to every learning experience until it becomes automatic. The more you do it, the better a learner you become. The better a learner you become, the faster you take in information, and the longer you remember. The 15th technique is called whole learning. This is used when you need to memorize a lot of material by heart, perhaps a poem or a play. The method is simple. Don't try to learn it bit by bit or line by line. Instead, learn it as a whole. First, read all the way through completely, making sure you understand it. Go back over those parts that were difficult to understand and make sure that you have them clear in your mind. You won't be able to remember what you don't understand. Second, reread it again quickly and again. Third, reread it again, this time aloud, but concentrate on hearing the words in your mind. Fourth, reread it again aloud and this time with as many visual pictures or images as you can produce. Imagine everything that you are learning as clearly as possible. Number 5, reread it again aloud and add actions or movements as far as is appropriate. Number 6, repeat this whole pattern again from stage 1 to stage 5. This seems like a lot of repetition, but it's been proven that this whole learning approach is at least 50% faster than trying to learn something one part at a time. The reason why is clear. This method of learning is multisensory. It starts with a big picture and gradually activates every sense in the process of learning. To demonstrate this to yourself, take a poem or a passage from a play or from Shakespeare and decide to commit it to memory by reading it and then by going over and over it while you say it aloud visualize the material, and walk around dramatically as you recite it. You'll be astonished at how fast you'll memorize it. The 16th technique of memorization is overlearning. If you really want to remember something, you should aim to overlearn it. For a really crucial piece of information or for an important subject, you should not only review it until you know it by heart, but you should even continue to learn it beyond that point. Experience tells you that a learning activity like riding a bicycle, which you do over and over again, long after you've learned how to do it properly, is never forgotten. You repeat the actions often enough to acquire the skill as a lifelong memory. This works with languages as well, as with virtually any other subject. And finally, the 17th learning technique is to compress lots of information into an easily recalled format by chunking it down and then labeling it with key words. This involves three steps. First, make your notes in the form of a learning map. Second, title each learning map with a single word. Third, invent a mnemonic which enables you to remember all the title words. Review your learning maps over and over again as they relate to the single title word. In time, you'll be able to remember not only the learning map, but the entire subject by simply triggering the word that refers to the entire body of knowledge. Above all, to develop a super memory, you must practice memory techniques until you memorize them and you can apply them automatically, like pointing a powerful beam of light at any new piece of information that you want to retain indefinitely. Your memory is inexhaustible, and the only limits on it are the limits that you allow by your own thinking.